All Elite Podcast. Covering all the latest news and results from the AEW.
Wait a minute. Sean Spears? Chair shot right to the side of the head of Cody.
This is pro wrestling analysis as you've never heard before.
Deathly Hallows!
Might be it.
One, two, three, can save it!
Coming to you every single week. So without any further delay, let's go all in and get the show started right now.
Hello and welcome everybody to AEW Aftershock. I'm your host Zach Perez at Spots High on Twitter. And what a week of Dynamite it was this week. We had a little bit of everything you could ask for in a wrestling product. Some great promo work, some very interesting angles and storylines being developed, some of my favorite stars and wrestlers from AEW being represented very well. I was very thoroughly entertained very much throughout this 2 hours of Dynamite tonight. So a great show, and I want to kick it right off. But first things first, I do want to shout out the fact that I am going to be starting a weekly review of AEW Dark over on ProWrestlingPost.com. So make sure you go ahead and check it out over there. Also, make sure you keep an eye out on my Twitter for all other announcements. I'm going to be bringing some more writing, some more things like that. So always keep an eye out there. I'll always be bringing all my announcements there and making sure to let you guys know what I'm bringing to you next, because I'm always got tons of opinions and a lot of places to bring it to you. So keep an eye out there for some announcements coming soon for sure. But let's kick it off here with the first match, which actually probably lasted less time than it took for me to rattle off that intro. It was Jon Moxley versus Alex Reynolds. And if you blinked, you would have missed it. I mean, he basically did a V-trigger sort of like knee, then a paradigm shift in what was like a Goldberg-like victory in what must have been under 30 seconds. And then he just went out there and had John Silver try to sneak attack him and hit the same thing on him, and ended up having Jericho come to the ring and kind of rekindle their feud. So just a nice little way to kick things off and get the crowd going, and it worked very effectively, as Jericho would make sure to mention himself later on when he joined the commentary booth, but we'll get to that later on. But it was nice to see Moxley kind of get represented well and kick off the show, and I love his new entrance where he makes his way from the back of the crowd down into the ring. I think that's a very smart way to get the crowd enticed, and a great way to bring him out early and get that crowd reaction, especially from the standpoint of throughout the whole night they were engaged and active and very much into this night of Dynamite. So very well done by Moxley, and I think this was a great way to kick off the show, and very interesting dynamic developing here as Chris Jericho did address Moxley and say basically that he was sort of a mentor figure to Moxley in a way, you know, coming back from when he first joined the WWE and he was asking for help on how to get over, you know, kind of interestingly breaking that kayfabe wall a little bit more and more each day in the world of AEW, which I personally do enjoy, but, you know, I understand why that's not everybody's cup of tea, but I just kind of enjoy those kind of fourth wall breaking moments. But he was essentially saying that he had helped him get into the business and get a more main event quality out of himself, and he also helped guide him to AEW as well. So he essentially kind of owed him one, is what he was trying to allude to. And he couldn't really gauge too much off of Moxley. He was kind of keeping it cool, didn't really react too much, didn't say anything, but he was offered the position in the inner circle, and Jericho draped the t-shirt over his shoulder. He made some expressions at the camera that kind of made you believe that he wasn't taking Jericho too seriously, but you never really know what's going on in the mind of a crazy person, so it could go any direction, and seeing him join the inner circle would be a very interesting twist. And I really like the dynamic of how AEW is kind of being settled upon around these factions and these feuds that are really defining the promotion so far. So I think that this is a really smart play, and it further extends out the idea of Jericho versus Moxley further down the line to 2020. And later on, we would see an announcement for AEW Revolution. That's going to be February 29th in downtown Chicago. You know, Chicago again. I'm not quite sure why they're going to Chicago so often, but you know, they are doing very well there, so I do understand that from a business perspective. But I would like to see them kind of branch out a little bit and go a little more across the country with their pay-per-views, just as they're doing with their television products. So we'll see how that goes in the future. But regardless, it's nice to see them kind of building this Jericho and Moxley thing out for a future pay-per-view, potentially for that in Chicago. You know, that would be a great way to kick off the new year and a great way to kind of headline that pay-per-view. And, you know, he is contractually obligated, I'm sure, to defend the title sometime in 2020, I'm assuming. So that's probably where it's going to come from and get a kickoff to the year in a big way. So very exciting stuff, and very interested to see how the Inner Circle Moxley interactions are going to go from here on out now that he's been offered a spot in this elite group. But next up, we had Cody and QT Marshall taking on Butcher and Blade, accompanied, of course, by the Bunny. You know, the three B's, not the Better Business Bureau, as I think it was Tony Schiavone said that. But it was a pretty insane match, actually. I didn't expect a whole lot. You know, I expected it to be a very storyline-driven matchup. But as the contest went on, I was actually very nicely surprised by how much action there was in this match. And but not a lot of Cody, actually. He was kind of taken out of the matchup a lot of the time. Asserted himself a little bit early by, you know, tagging himself in and making it so that he was the first man in the matchup, even though he kind of teased it as being QT Marshall. But he kind of went on a little spurt there for a little while, hit some offense, but then it ended up being a lot of QT Marshall kind of lighting up the crowd, which was a very nice sight to see, especially for someone who is mostly a relatively unknown to a lot of people in terms of the bigger audience, you know. So it's good to see all of those moves that he was hitting were getting a nice pop out of the crowd, and that all alludes back to the opening with Moxley and having the Chris Jericho segment. It all stacks up very nicely and progressed the card along very well as well by getting the crowd right into it. And it just was very, very smart card placement. And I think that's something that AEW is getting better and better at every single week. And this was kind of a masterful card in terms of that. And this match was definitely a good example of that. And Marshall definitely was the beneficiary of a very hot crowd, hitting some crazy aerial offense, some corkscrews, and, you know, at one point hitting a, you know, handspring off the ropes and bouncing back for a back elbow. Just the moves were kind of catching everybody, myself included, very much by surprise. And so it was just very much insane to see this happening from somebody you expected to kind of be the jobber half of the tag team. So I love the idea of having him kind of be the dark horse and come in and actually be a ringer and kind of dominate a lot of the time against Butcher and Blade. But they still did hit a lot of offense on QT, and they did end up taking the victory after some nice tandem offense. Although I'm not 100% sold on their finisher yet. I think it just needs some polishing on the execution side. But I do like the tag team of Butcher and Blade. I think they play off of each other very well. Just like Excalibur said, you know, you've got Butcher, who's kind of the brute big man, and then you've got Blade, who's kind of more the technique. You know, he's doing the suicide dives, like is so much a part of AEW, as the critics like to kind of pick it apart and say everybody's doing suicide dives. But, you know, I kind of like that. So, you know, to each their own. But I just think that it's a great tag team to kind of switch things up a little bit, because I think Butcher really adds a nice element. He's kind of one of those old school big guys who kind of just hosses around the ring, and you could definitely see him getting into some wars, maybe with Jon Moxley in a singles matchup, even in some hardcore atmosphere. I could definitely see that being a very big war atmosphere at some point in the future. But for now, in the tag division, this pairing is very, very nice, and they definitely play off each other well. And the involvement with having Ali as their manager, as the Bunny, is a nice little play on that too, and adds a little element that not other tag teams have currently too. So that was all very well done. And I think that this matchup really just put QT Marshall over very well, and Butcher and Blade. And, you know, although Cody wasn't involved very much, he still got a huge pop from the crowd and, you know, did exactly the fan service that you would expect from, you know, one of the bigger baby faces of the company, kind of kicking things off near the top of the card of the night. I guess really you could probably call it the first match, given how quick the Moxley matchup was. But not far behind it was MJF, who was here to kind of remind you exactly who was behind the Butcher and Blade coming after Cody in the first place, doing a nice little promo with Wardlow after this matchup. And he is just an excellent, excellent heel. I mean, the way he works the crowd, he had the crowd in the palm of his hands. Threw out a little Roman Reigns suffering succotash line as he mocked Cody in his lisp, and he just knows how to pick every little weak point that he knows will get the crowd reacting exactly how he wants them to. And he's just absolutely genius and masterful in the way that he crafts his promos. And one quotable moment that really stuck out to me was where he said, to quote a legend, bud, you do not throw rocks at people with machine guns. And when my mouth's open, then these bullets don't miss. And that was just a really nice little play on words and a play off of the great Roddy Piper. So I loved that, and it definitely got the crowd energized having this promo and him teasing the fact that he would face Cody finally after making that, you know, social media post where he made a list saying that he wouldn't face Cody. I think that this was a very smart play, and once again gets things very well set up for 2020 and probably the Revolution pay-per-view as well, as they start to long-term build towards that pay-per-view. And speaking of 2020, somebody who I think will have a huge 2020 will be Big Swole in AEW. And I think that her AEW Dark promo that she had, that, you know, like I said, you know, I did a AEW After Dark review on ProWrestlingPost.com where I kind of break down more of the full Dark review and go through the show in full detail. But this just was a amazing video package, and it really explained her story very well. And I wish that they would do this a little more often with the talent and kind of explain it to the television audience. But I think that they did a great job of introducing her, and I think that it's worth just playing before I get into this match between her and Emi Sakura, just so you can get an idea of who Big Swole is and why I think she's going to have a huge 2020 with AEW and might be a big building block for their women's division going forward. So it's about 4 minutes or so. So if you've already heard it, you can go ahead and skip through. But if not, I highly recommend the listen, because her story is truly inspirational and truly awesome. So definitely worth the listen if you haven't done so already. So here we go.
Who is Big Swole? Big Swole is me. I am the Big Swole. I am the swolest of the big and the biggest of the swole. Basically, it just means I have a big personality and a swole mentality. So everything in life, it's swole. It's big. It's grand. It's grandioso. It's great. It's all that. And then some La Negra Tiene Tumbao. It's all that. And a bag of chips, you know? Just my personality. I just put it out there, and I'm just me. April 3rd, 2008, my parents call it my second birthday because I legit died, and they had to pretty much bring me back, and it was this very scary moment in my life. We think you have Crohn's. We're going to do a CAT scan, and after the CAT scan, the doctor came up to me and said, you have 30 minutes to live, or your intestines is going to explode in your body, and then there's nothing that we can do about it. So after rushing to emergency surgery, they took out almost like 2 feet of my intestines. It tore my whole world apart, honestly, especially being told like to I was never going to be able to have kids or never be able to be active, and I was always active my whole entire life. I tried giving up a lot of times. In my mind, I was all like, I already can't have kids. Like, what am I going to do? Like, this is, like, it's it for me. Like after I pass away, there's no one else I can, you know, give my love to or share my stories with. So, kind of just broke me down and put me in a bad mental place. And so I just spiraled out of control, completely out of control. Yeah. After I got pregnant with our daughter, Odessa, it reinvigorated my will to live and not just be, not just go through the motions or let this disease control me and control my life. I usually tell myself every day, Ariel, you're not going to be motivated, but that's why you have to be disciplined. You have to have that mentality to keep going, keep striving, because there's people out there, their dreams rely on me completing mine. And I will not let anybody down. I will not let my people down. I will not let people looking up to me, straddling the fence, people who want to be wrestlers, people with, you know, irritable bowel disease or Crohn's disease or lupus or any other ailment that's harming them. And the doctors are telling me you that you can't do something. You can't go on and you can't do this. And me, I'm just like, screw that. I answer to someone who has the last word. I just took that and I just kind of ran with it.
Whoa.
Thank you for having me.
No, of course. Actually, we would love to have you back more. Would you be willing to accept an interview?
Yeah.
We want to keep bringing you back. There's so much potential. The sky's the limit for you, and we need someone like you on the roster. So, if you would accept our offer, I would be. Listen to those people. You know, they love you out there. So, thank you so much, and hope to see you much more. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Crohn's disease is really just a mental game. You have to get over that block of you can't do something or you shouldn't do something because you're scared of X, Y, and Z happening. And can't should not be in your vocabulary. Like fear, you just push it away, push it aside. And a can't and a won't will leave you stagnant for life. Think outside of that box, and you have to say, I can and I will, because what you think and what you say, it goes out into the universe, and the universe will give you exactly what you feel. So be very mindful about listening to people's advice about you, because I honestly believe that what people think about you should be none of your concern.
So that is the story of Big Swole. And it was nice to see this video package brought into AEW Dark to kind of tell a little bit more in depth of the backstage story of the wrestlers here, especially given that the women's division has largely been criticized for a lack of doing that sort of development. But I would still like to see more of this leak onto Dynamite and make its way into TNT television and give a little more time to give the audience a little more reaction. And you could see it in the matchup here where they just weren't quite responding as well as they would have if they would have built them up more strongly over the weeks. I think that Emi Sakura is playing her role very well of being a gatekeeper of the women's division, but at the same time, she hasn't really had the victories to back that up. A nice little heel run, maybe on Dark, where she can go through and run a few opponents down and just kind of get those wins to bolster her record, or even just some video packages to mention the fact that she is, you know, kind of already an established legend in the industry in her own right. I think that that would be a very good way towards working their crowd reaction up and maybe finally getting a We Will Rock You chant out of the crowd finally, as they started to get a little more receptive here for Emmy, but not quite there just yet. But some nice little spots in the match, a little mic stand throw that led to a back and forth where some different music eras collided, as you had Big Swole doing a little James Brown impression, and then you also had her throwing it to the ref as she hit a spear, so that was a nice little moment. But overall, some good back and forth action, nothing too crazy over the top, but it was a nice way to just put Big Swole over and kind of capitalize on the momentum that her Dark video had gotten her. So She ended up hitting her finisher, which is called the Dirty Dancing, a sort of ripcord version of Lacey Evans's Woman's Right, if you will. And it was a nice looking move, definitely has an interesting twist to it, given that there's kind of a couple quick twists in it with the ripcord. So very interesting, and I like that maneuver, and I think that it'll get over very quickly as a good finishing move for Swole, and it kind of fits her personality well. But this was a good little contest, but at the same time, like I said, I think that putting her video package here and shortening this match probably would have put her over a little better than just having this longer contest go on here. So next up we had Pax promo, which felt a little bit out of place and short, but pretty simple, and just the content was brilliant, and Pac just deserves what he's looking for, plain and simple. He needs a rubber match with Kenny Omega, and to just prove that, you know, before he decides to take matters into his own hands, which might be a little entertaining in and of itself, but I think that it's best that we just go ahead and give that match up, because I would be thoroughly entertained to see that revisited again, and I think that this promo delivered that nicely, and once again, you know, just planting seeds for what we're going to see in 2020 out of AEW. Next up, we had Kip Sabian and Shawn Spears taking on Kenny Omega and Adam Page, which I kind of thought that there might have been a little bit of involvement from Pac, or maybe having Adam Page turn on Omega at some point, you know, to play off of the BTE stuff with him saying that he needed to get back to the cowboy shit as he was talking with Private Party. But I didn't end up having any of that happen. There was some tease tension with the finish as Page kind of stole the victory with a buckshot lariat after Omega had the V-trigger and seemed like he had the kind of win in the bag. But this was a nice little matchup. Tully Blanchard opened it up with a simple promo regarding teamwork and just saying how he was pairing Kip and Shawn Spears together. So we'll see if that ends up being a tag team and how that progresses. But I would like to see some more attention given to some more of the established teams like Evans and Angelico, just to give them a little more shine and get them some experience on the main television product as well. But this was a nice contest. Spears, you know, kind of immediately tagging out to Sabian immediately as the match started, didn't exactly show prime teamwork to start off with, but, you know, the ring psychology got a little better and the teamwork got a little better for both teams as the match went on, so it sold the kind of dynamic that they weren't too comfortable with each other, but were kind of gaining that trust throughout the night. So I like that little simple storytelling that they were able to achieve with that. But a huge reaction for Omega as he was brought in for the first tag, and it was calmed down quite nicely with a little shushing, very librarian-esque, and they had a nice chop fest back and forth, him and Adam Page, at Sabian's expense, which was a nice little spot to call out the beautiful chops that Omega executes, probably, I say it all the time, probably the best in the business. But, you know, it's always worth mentioning, they're just executed so crisply and just sends a sickening thud throughout the arena every time, which, you know, just gets the crowd to pop beautifully. But the lights ended up going out here, and right as Sabian was going for the tag to Spears, and Janella ended up having Tully Blanchard tied up on the stage, which was a good idea, but I think it was just poorly executed. They didn't really have a finish to it. They didn't really brawl, or they didn't just really have anywhere to go with the actual concept once he reached the stage. So I think that continuing the feud is probably a good idea, but at the same time, they're going a few different directions with Spears trying to form this team now with Sabian. So I don't know exactly how to feel about this, and I don't think that it quite hit on the level that they may have been hoping it would have. And I think that they should have had more of a shock value moment, maybe even having him backstage so that he ran off out of picture would have been a better idea, but it's all execution based things, and that is learned with time by AEW. So this was nice and led to the finish that I had aforementioned, where Kenny got his victory kind of stolen by Paige. So we'll see where that leads to and see if that brings up more tension. You know, like I said, I kind of had the feeling that there was going to be a turn moment where Paige kind of turned over on Omega after already quitting from the Elite, essentially, in the BTE stuff and the commentary mentioning that he was more aggressive than usual. It just seemed like all signs were kind of pointing towards something happening with Adam here that just didn't happen. So we'll see if maybe he does join Marty Scurll, as I've been predicting for weeks here, to join AEW. We'll see if he joins Marty Scurll for a Villain Enterprises sort of deal, or if he maybe does his own thing and just goes lone wolf and starts lashing out at people, or maybe a dark horse moment here, James Storm comes in and they start feuding, or they form a tag team called Cowboy Shit. But, you know, we'll see where this goes from here. But I did like this matchup, and I think that there's a lot of different directions they can go, but I think that unfortunately Spears and Janelle are kind of in a weird place right now as a result of where their storyline has been left off. Next up, we had Luchasaurus taking on Sammy Guevara, which was a nice little quick squash match. You know, it definitely got a mix of offense. However, you know, Guevara got in some exchanges, but it was kind of exactly what you were expecting. A little build up towards the Jericho and Jurassic Express feud, you know, having the Inner Circle get involved on commentary and then eventually make their way down to the ring after the fact. I thought that this was done very nicely, and I think that it, once again, just kind of leading the breadcrumbs along and developing the storyline nicely. Not a whole lot to talk about in terms of the in-ring content, just because it was very much a kind of cut and dry setup just to lead to exactly what you expected to happen, which was Luchasaurus hitting his tombstone face buster sort of finisher. But some nice moments throughout as well. At one point, Guevara went for a shooting star press that led into a choke slam from Luchasaurus, and definitely called back to the Guevara Twitter outburst that he had, where he was calling out fans for saying that nobody was there when he did the shooting star press on his little vlog moment from the other week. So I thought that was nice, and it kind of calls back to the fact that they really pay attention to a lot of those little details. But Luchasaurus, I think, should be kind of protected at this point. He's such a big star right now that I think that he should be in those kind of Goldberg squash matches, kind of similar to what Moxley was to kick off the night. So having him against Guevara kind of put them in a booking predicament, I think, and they did it well, and Guevara sold everything beautifully and did all the right things. But I just think that at this point Luchasaurus should be just wrecking people, but that might be just a little bit of favoritism because I'm such a huge fan of Luchasaurus. But I think 2020 is gonna sort of be the year of the dinosaur, so to speak, and I think that he's going to come out a very big part of AEW's future plans, and that's gonna probably materialize a lot with what they're going to do starting in probably February with the Revolution pay-per-view. I think that they're kind of alluding to a potential matchup between Luchasaurus and Jericho for the title with the matchup with Jungle Boy. So we'll see where this leads to, but I would love to see some sort of gold around Luchasaurus's waist before the end of 2020, and that's something that I definitely think is in the forecast, whether it be a new title or whether it be the gold that Le Champion is carrying right now. We'll have to see. But finally, we ended up having the kind of piece of La Resistance of the night, the main event, the Young Bucks taking on Ortiz and Santana in the Texas Street Fight. And I thought this was an excellent use of a very limited time frame, very overbooked sort of matchup, tables flying everywhere, trash cans, cookie sheets, just a little bit of every type of weapon you could imagine, and just used so beautifully with so many different spots. It's like they ran through a 30-minute match in what was about 10. It was just brilliant stuff in a classic Young Bucks exhibition of just going absolutely all out and throwing their bodies on the line and doing a tremendous job of working with a limited time frame to get the best possible match they could have out of both them and the team of Ortiz and Santana. So it was a nice way to build this rivalry up further and kind of showcase the fact that there is this blood feud going on, and having them rush out and attack them from the beginning and put Brandon Cutler through the stage, and just so many moments that built on what is already a very well-established feud. And it just further kind of brings out this divide of the stable wars that's existing in All Elite Wrestling right now. And I think that they're really building on a very solid foundation with the Young Bucks and Ortiz and Santana in their tag division. And I think it's very safe to say that there's really no better tag division in all of wrestling right now. You look at SCU holding the tag belts right now, and then you've got the Young Bucks, and you've got Ortiz and Santana. You've got Butcher and Blade making their debut now, and you've got, you know, Jack Evans and Angelico that still haven't even really gotten their chance yet, and Jurassic Express. And it just really seems like no contest, in my opinion, when you look at the rest of the wrestling world and the state that it's in with tag wrestling. It's just nice to see this sort of rejuvenation that's going on. And this matchup was just so all over the place and very much reminded me of the Hardy Boys and, you know, Dudley's and Edge and Christian TLC matches. And heading into Sunday, it kind of maybe makes me a little disappointed to think of what might be of the actual TLC pay-per-view that's coming on Sunday in comparison. We didn't end up seeing the ladders get involved, but a little bit of everything else, you know, the tables, the chairs, and I guess trash cans. So it's a TTC instead of a TLC. So it was just very smartly executed and very good use of the time that they had. And I think that it would have fit in very well on any WWE pay-per-view, in the sense of it would have been a highlight of the night and probably would have outshined anything on that card on TLC on Sunday. I'm going to go ahead and bet that. So a great way to cap off the night and a great way to continue out this awesome feud. And I could just see these two fight forever and I would be very, very happy. So very well deserved of some fight forever chance. Although I don't know if I heard any of those broke out, but that might have just been my echo in the living room. But a very solid night of Dynamite all around. And it just seems like they're figuring out the formula more and more of how to create the, you know, quote unquote perfect wrestling card, at least to my taste. I guess it's variable from every wrestling fan what your perfect formula is, but I think this mix of a little bit of hardcore, a little bit of high flying, you know, some very solid technical wrestling, just some good storytelling, some good promos, to me, it just mixed a little bit of all of what you could ask for. And I like the fact that they've got, you know, Penelope Ford being this active wrestling manager and bringing that back, and Tully Blanchard being the old school manager and having the stable wars and bringing back all sorts of different elements of wrestling that you may have thought were on their way out. I was absolutely enticed from start to finish, and I think that, you know, going forward, Dynamite is just going to keep being the favorite of mine and the highlight of my week. And I will, of course, be bringing you the AEW Aftershock after the show is done. So be sure to follow me on Twitter at SpotsHigh, and also keep an eye out every week for the AEW After Dark review, which is going to be available on ProWrestlingPost.com. Also check out my articles for on Last Word on ProWrestling.com. Also my articles on What Culture. And as always, all the new announcements and everything going down with any new projects will be at SpotsHigh on Twitter. But for now, until next time, goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night. Goodbye and good night.